The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Hey everyone, I'm John Z, and you're listening to The Pulse on CFRO Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. Today, I'll be speaking with Megan Fox and Bobby Nika from Street Saviors Outreach Society. SSOS is a registered nonprofit and a secular, grassroots, all-volunteer-run organization that provides outreach, emergency first aid, food items, overdose response, and harm reduction to those in need during their nightly patrols of the streets and alleys of the downtown East Side. Their teams actively provide wound care and emergency first aid in responding to overdoses, which, as we know, we're having an abundance of here in Vancouver. The numbers currently average around 5 overdose deaths a day, and just in September alone, there were 152 deaths by overdose. That's just in one single month. Recently, I was invited to join Street Saviors for one of their nightly patrols and was thoroughly impressed with just how efficiently organized their teams were. From food prep to harm reduction supplies, Street Saviors covers it all and progressively approaches people in the streets with compassion, care, and love.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, sometimes we...
Can you guys hear me? My radio's pretty quiet.
I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, great. Can you please introduce yourself and tell us where you're from?
My name's Megan. I'm from East Vancouver. I grew up in the Killarney area.
What do you do here with Street Savior?
I'm an outreach leader, so I handle as much as the outreach portion of our job, and I kind of guide our teams through our routes and watch over my team, delegate tasks when we do get involved with a crisis or an overdose or anything like that.
And how big is your team usually?
Usually about 4 to 6 people, but sometimes we're small, so I'll just have 3 others.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the outreach side of things, you're doing wellness checks, you'll approach people, see if they need any access to resources or supports?
Yeah, so I usually will have my phone on and Google is my best friend. I'll see whatever it is that I can do, even if it's just calling BC211 or one of the other shelters that I work at. I can ask if they have any beds available, things like that. Yeah.
And what drew you to volunteer here?
I wanted more hands-on experience. I mean, I was a support worker with Battered Women's Support Services, and we were mainly doing online and over-the-phone appointments. And I was kind of missing that connection. And I have personal experience in my family with addiction, so it was kind of the perfect opportunity. And it just looked fun.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And what kind of things, I mean, I was just witnessing kind of your preparation for tonight, right? But could you tell us a little bit of what goes into preparing to go out on outreach?
Teamwork. It's a lot of chains of just hands helping. We double check our medical bags, especially as an outreach leader. I have to make sure that we have all of our supplies. Our medic, like, knows what they're doing, fully capable. We put all the teams together, make sure they're all, like, diverse gender-wise, so we're not a big group of men or a big group of women, you know? Making sure there's a balance of, like, new people to, like, seasoned pros. Just kind of helping out, leading as best as I can.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is, like, rain, sleet, or snow type of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Yeah, and it happens, how many days a week are you doing this?
2 days a week is how often we go out. I try and go out once a week, sometimes it's once every 2-3 weeks. I'm also a full-time student,
right.
So,
oh, yeah. Great. Yeah, and yeah. You're handing out tons of food. I noticed, like, you guys were prepping sandwiches,
yeah.
And you got all types of bakery treats and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Where does that all come from?
Comes from Cobb's Bakery. They donate all of their stuff that's about to be expired, so we can just, like, cram through it. And we usually do Nutella just because it's easiest, because, you know, it's hard to get fresh meat and everything. Nutella's pretty easy. But we have had turkey sandwiches, burritos, kind of whatever we can whip up.
Yeah.
I'm
curious in your opinion, what's something, because we're really, this opioid crisis is insane. Like, and people are, there was 152 deaths just in September alone, right? What's something about the opioid crisis that just isn't getting communicated to the public? Or something that, as a frontline worker yourself, you're out there, you're seeing it. What's a misconception that we're having about this opioid crisis?
I mean, this is something that I've kind of, because I study this in school as well, and I think people paint fentanyl as the killer. And in reality, fentanyl is a drug. It's a drug like all drugs. We have overdoses from cocaine as well that are pretty high, right? And I feel like when we paint fentanyl as this big killer and we fail to acknowledge the fact that poverty kills, no access to medical care kills, all these sort of factors that contribute to drug use and then contribute to poisonings, I just feel like it's a little counterproductive. It's ignored. And, you know, introducing, you know, Narcan and harm reduction is going to all of a sudden fix this. It has to be way more than that.
Right. It's interesting that the city isn't employing people to come down here and do something like this in the middle of a crisis as well, right? You know, this is, we're having a lot of mandates and protocol for COVID, which is great, you know, but there's also people dying from drug overdoses and you're all volunteer based, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, they've shown that we could do it if we wanted. I mean, a big example for me is the Portugal strategy. They have an amazing strategy in how they approach their opiate. And, you know, they had this massive addiction issue. And what they did was street-based outreach as, like, a main form of their harm reduction. And entire city-wide, statewide coordination of services, and I feel like that kind of lacks here. We've got all these incredible orgs, and none of them know what any of them are doing, what services they offer. You just kind of know it off the top of your head. But, you know, there needs to be, like, something where we can all coordinate, right?
Yeah. Well, street saviors.
Yeah.
You're here, and thank God you are. I'm happy to be here, and I'm going to go out on the patrol with you guys tonight. I guess just in closing, what's something about the downtown east side that's missed on people who aren't from around here? Maybe something that people just don't get exposed to if they're not down here ever.
I think it's funny how it really is a little town in the midst of a massive city. I don't think people realize, like, everyone knows everyone. And it's, you know, you watch people having arguments or having a laugh or having a cry together. Like, you can tell they've known each other for years. And even though there is a lot of violence, there's a lot of community connection down here. And I think if the strains were lifted and everyone wasn't so stressed out all the time, we would probably have a lot less violence and a lot less stealing from each other and, you know, all this kind of drama, because people really do connect down here. Yeah.
I appreciate your insight. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Has anybody got any hand sanitizer, guys? Probably give me a squirt. Got some swabs, maybe for the party pack.
No, I'm good.
Yeah, do you want a squirt of hand sanitizer? Okay, all right. Sandwich, bottle of water.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Kind of like always, there's always like somebody there, you know what I mean? Like around the clock.
Oh, what do you got?
Got like water and pastries.
Yeah. Bring it on. I thought you
could help. Right? We got socks.
You need anything? You got benzo down? Just kidding.
Socks?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a situation. My shoes are really wet.
Okay.
I don't have other shoes. Can I have one more
pair? Another pair of socks? Yeah.
Oh, so you just work for yourselves?
Yeah. Well, it's not really work. It's all volunteer.
Are you guys former addicts or something?
I am, but some
of us have like friends with addiction. Usually there's like some sort of personal connection there. And then.
My name is Bobby Nika. I'm a coordinator and the communications director, as well as a medical team lead for Street Savers Outreach Society. In my day job, I'm a cybersecurity analyst for UBC. So I've been with Street Savers for, going on about 3 years now, maybe just a little bit over. Basically, what SSOS is it's a secular, peer-based, all-volunteer outreach organization that also provides first aid and emergency medical attention for a wide variety of scenarios and situations, ranging from wound and infection care to responding to people who've been bear sprayed, cleaning up injuries, and a good portion of what we do is also responding to overdoses. So our cohort, we're comprised of a number of volunteers. I would say probably at this point there's roughly, they're currently active, meaning, you know, on a month-to-month basis that they're regularly participating, maybe about 100 active volunteers, many of whom are either on career paths or study paths towards various sort of healthcare-related fields or first responder fields. So we have a lot of students who have recently gotten certification as EMRs or primary care paramedics, first responders, LPNs, RNs, etc. We also have a number of people who are either on career paths or are actively working as support workers, as social workers, and things like that, as well as people who are in recovery, myself included.
Yeah. What drew you to volunteer here initially?
Well, so the organization actually started about six years ago now. And it was started subsequent to a conversation on a Facebook thread that myself and a friend of mine from high school, Ryan, who's the founder of this organization, were having in regards to how often we'd found ourselves in situations where we had to respond to an overdose or Narcan, a friend of ours, and kind of reflecting on mutual friends who had passed. And this was like in 2016, I want to say. You know, at the time, initially, shortly after that conversation, Ryan called me one night, and at that time, I was still myself in active addiction and kind of precariously housed and so forth. And Ryan was in a recovery home, and he called me and he said that he was, with some of the guys from his recovery house, and they had made some sandwiches to hand out, and they had some Narcan kits, and they were kind of just going on a patrol, and asking where the problems were sort of most concentrated in terms of overdoses. And at the time, I didn't really know what to make of it. But over the months and years that passed, I sort of watched it blossom. And then I believe like in 2018, I ran into them myself, and I saw this large truck full of people kind of handing out food and sort of emanating this energy of love, and it really blew me away. And I told him, okay, well, at that point, I'd been in the straits that I was for a little over a decade, and I was coming up to sort of like being just about done. And I told him that when I got my crap together, I'd join up, and that was maybe 2 or 3 months after that.
And what kind of training did somebody have to do this?
So in order to participate, I mean, we're a low barrier. Anybody who wants to give back, wants to come out, see what we're all about, and wants to help, or feels compelled to, is more than welcome to come patrol with us. Many of our outreach volunteers, which is how all of our volunteers start, anybody who's able to, withstand like a few hours of walking around outside and to do so, without judgment or stigma for people, for some of the most vulnerable, populations in our community, is more than welcome. However, for the medical roles, for the people who are responding to and providing care, generally speaking, it's sort of where we set the bar would be like a current certification and/or licensing that is analogous to BC EMALB's the licensing board's EMR designation, so yeah. Emergency medical responders. So that would also include first responder level 3 and OFA 3 as well, or anything above.
Yeah.
So basically somebody who is comfortable using a bag valve mask, administering oxygen, inserting an airway, using an oximeter, things like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's quite the operation here. I was noticing, like when I came down here, I jumped right in, and prior to talking to you, I was helping get sandwiches together. People are shoving backpacks full of harm reduction kits, full of Narcan, full of pastries. Kind of just like speak on what goes into preparing for hitting the streets.
Basically, on every night, what will happen is we'll arrive once a week. We get bread donations from Cobb's Bread, so we're partnered with a location that will, at the end of the day, they'll give us all their pastries, all their loaves of bread, and that usually will hold us off for a week of patrols. And so what we'll do is we'll show up, we'll start slicing up, in our bread slicer, the bread, and we'll make Nutella sandwiches. We'll bag up pastries and candy, water bottles, small toiletry items, small clothing items like socks, toques, that sort of stuff. As well as stocking our med kits and creating teams, so teams to make sure that there's a sort of experienced team leader, as well as a couple medics on every team, and that every team is gender balanced for different situations that could present. Yeah. Often there'll be some new volunteers who will get like an orientation, which is about half an hour to 45 minutes long, and includes like a Narcan training session, as well as kind of a review of our protocols and our sort of policies. And so then that whole process takes about an hour to an hour and a half sometimes.
Right.
And then we break up into teams and we hit the streets for a few hours. And we look to really fill that gap, because a lot of the other services that are available in the downtown east side, they do shut down in the evenings.
Yeah.
And it does seem to me that for whatever reason, like in my experience, I seem to encounter a lot more overdoses like after, let's say, 11 p.m. than I do in like a similar sort of time frame earlier in the evening or in the day for whatever reason.
How are you recognized when you're out there? Like, how do people know who you are when you approach them?
Well, again, like I myself personally, I have several years of lived experience in the downtown East Side, so maybe like I'm more readily, I guess, known, and I've been with the organization for some time. But when we patrol in these high vis vests that are, you know, the red designates a medic, the yellow is a team leader, and the orange is an outreach volunteer. And when people see us, I mean, they know immediately that, you know, we're providing a service, and we generally enjoy like a pretty great kind of relationship with the streets. So I mean, we are able to patrol like in places that other outreach organizations maybe wouldn't be able to, because we do have so many of our cohort who are like, you know, from the hood, who are from that community. So I mean, like places like you know, when the Oppenheimer Temp City was at its sort of most precarious and most kind of you know, difficult a few years back, you know, that was still an area that we felt safe in. And even like some of the communities on the street, some of the groups and gangs on the street, they're aware of us, and sort of we, as long as we, you know, we don't do anything that steps on their toes, that, you know, we operate with their sanction as well too. And that's good, because effectively, like, we're there to try and keep everybody safe.
So how have people living on the streets been impacted by the extreme weather that we've been having lately, such as the heavy rainfalls that we've been experiencing? Are you noticing like a change in the supports that you're offering? Are you noticing an increase in certain things?
So I mean, certainly, like, I mean, we respond to the weather and we respond to the changing seasons and what have you accordingly. So I mean, usually in the fall, what we do is we will seek, depending on our own operating budget and sort of partner organizations that are sponsoring us in different ways, we'll seek supplies to sort of correspond with that. So in this case, like in the winter, it's sort of like Mylar blankets, it's toques, it's clothing items and things like that that we have kind of. You know, we've sort of increased the urgency of in terms of procurement, but in terms of the people on the street, like, I guess for the most part, I mean, having some lived experience of that myself in the past, like people are fairly adaptable, and one finds a solution. So I know that there are cold weather stations that are sort of like seasonal, sort of as needed stations that do open up, and I do believe they are open right now. Places like the 44, which is on Alexander Street. As well as like the new fountain shelter on East Hastings, as well as the sort of you know, the consistent kind of constant lookout shelters and the Salvation Army, etc., the other locations that are there. However, like a lot of people, myself included, in my time when I was sort of unhoused, you know, they for various reasons tended to avoid the shelters. Those shelters tend to often be either fairly high barrier in terms of stigma, in terms of requirements that surrounding sobriety, in terms of separating genders so that you couldn't be with your significant other, etc. Or if they were low barrier, often they were not necessarily the safest places. There could be places with like infestations of you know, bed bugs or super bugs, bacterial sort of you know, things of that nature, as well as just kind of a good place to get robbed. So, but people do kind of whether it's just sort of shacking up with a friend if they're homeless, you know, maybe one of their friends has a room in an SRO, or oftentimes it would be underground parking lots.
Right.
Right. But it's like,
yeah. I think that's a misconception that people think just because a shelter is a shelter, that it's four walls and a ceiling, mm-hmm. that's where somebody wants to go.
Right.
Right. Like that's a misconception that, like, cause it's not a home. No. It's a shelter.
Totally, exactly. And in some cases, I mean, like, even though, I mean, like, you know, the notion of, like, okay, well, sleeping, like, let's say, in a tent on the side of the street, like, that may seem pretty miserable to somebody who, you know, experienced kind of being in that situation and the options that present themselves, that may seem pretty rough as compared to, you know, like, going into, like, a church or somewhere like that where there's, you know, where there's heating and, like, you know, like, a roof and four walls, as you say. But if the requirements therein are that, you know, the substance that you may be physically dependent on to avoid getting sick is something that you can't ingest, or that you have to separate from your girlfriend who, you know, maybe, you know, has trauma and difficulty sort of being, you know, alone and you know, things of that nature, like, then it quickly becomes like, you know, untenable. So, yeah.
Yeah. In your time here, so it's, you said about 3 years you've been volunteering now?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
How many instances of like revival from overdose have you been?
Me personally, to be honest, I've long since lost count, but when I first started with SSOS, so kind of just in general, like in being in the community, and also just around that time, my count was somewhere in the 40s. By now, it's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 100, wow. Give or take, you know, maybe a dozen. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
a dozen.
Give or take a dozen. So like it's,
oh, give or take a dozen.
Somewhere, I would say, yeah, somewhere between 90 and 110, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Wow. So you're literally keeping people alive.
Yeah, in many cases. You know, I've heard sort of cynical people be cynical about that, kind of that you're keeping somebody alive, but you're just sort of, I guess, like enabling or perpetuating it. And it's like, I could point to an example, like kind of that, that's kind of illustrative. We've had guys come in for an orientation, new volunteers sort of come in for orientation, and then kind of, as I was doing the Narcan training, you know, the guy was like, you know, this, and this guy, like, I can vouch, this guy knows what he's talking about. And I was like, oh, well, thanks very much. That's kind of you. Like, but like, how do you know that? And he said, well, because you brought me back once. I was like, I did? And I didn't recognize the guy because he'd gotten like some more weight on him and he looked healthy and what have you. And he kind of reminded me of the details and the parameters. And then eventually I did remember. But yeah, so he was an example of somebody that he responded to an overdose who had, you know, and he had overdosed many, many times until he was ready, until the circumstances in his life were such that he was able to kind of come back and get his life together. But here he was then a couple of years down the road, you know, walking in the door for orientation, kind of suiting up to go look for the next guy, right? So so it does make a difference for sure.
Yeah. How does that make you feel?
It was a surreal feeling. It was a wonderful feeling. Like, yeah. It was on a bit of a cloud that night, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine.
He went on to become a good friend of mine.
Oh, that's great. That's wow. That's incredible. Just in closing here, Bobby, what's something about the downtown East Side that you want people to know about? Maybe something about this area that people outside of this community just have no idea about.
I guess I would say the one thing that I often find myself saying to people, because a lot of people kind of like, in terms of stigma around addiction, around homelessness and sort of the equivocation of that with like criminality, and sort of undesirability. One thing that strikes me regularly, like over and over again, is the amount of community and sort of, I guess, community and sort of real human decency that you see in the downtown East Side. It's something that, like, I can't think of anything analogous anywhere in any other community or locality in the city. And I guess maybe part of that is because of like vulnerability, destitution, all those sort of things. They do kind of bring out in a lot of ways they can bring out the best in people. They can bring out the worst also in certain circumstances. The thing that I would draw attention to would be that the humanity and the decency that you see in terms of, like, you know, like two people or maybe one person who doesn't at all know another person kind of stopping to kind of look after somebody or check somebody out, and then like effectively like reorganizing their day or kind of like around it, essentially kind of ensuring the safety of that person. So
yeah,
there is a sense of like a collective responsibility, which is kind of a really beautiful thing. And it's unfortunate that it comes with also, like, you know, within the framing and context of all this hardship.
I think we're about to head out here, right? Yeah, great, great. So I'm going to join you guys. I'm going to go out on the patrol with you. Thanks for having me here.
Thank you for coming.
All right, so how do you guys know who goes where?
So typically...
It's kind of winging it.
No, but you mean, so like, who goes...
Well,
where,
first off, where are we starting, maybe, I guess, is where are we going?
So typically we meet at Main and Hastings.
Okay.
And park a vehicle there with, like, extra sandwiches and pastries and such.
Okay. That's kind of like where the stash of sandwiches and everything will be?
Generally, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, sometimes we... Can you guys hear me? My radio's pretty quiet.
It's like, really, I would say, like, this little corner here is, like, more or less kind of like the Times Square, if you like, of the downtown East Side.
Right. Which is just like about a block down from Main and Hastings.
Yeah, it's sort of, yeah, it's basically the alley that runs behind Insight on Hastings between Main and Columbia.
Yeah.
And on the south side, it's Crack Alley. On the north side, it's Piss Alley.
Okay.
And if you know where like Blood Alley is, for example, that's a block up, but further up in Gastown.
Right.
So, yeah.
Which is like one of the oldest alleys in Vancouver history.
That's right. Yeah. These alleys are pretty old too. A lot of these buildings, these SROs, like, I mean, they have history. Like this one's in particular, the Balmoral, it's kind of one of the darker buildings. You know, out of all the SROs, like I had, when I was in addiction, I had rules, and one of them was never to enter the Balmoral. Like a sort of like sad wills of everybody who's like met an untimely demise inside that building. Like,
yeah, well, I know a guy who died in that building.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys mind if I ask you a couple questions about these guys?
Yeah.
Like, on record, is that okay about these, like, about the team here?
Yeah.
So, like, you see these guys pretty regularly, like, out there? Like, yeah. Like, how do they help the streets?
Well, they hand out clean supplies.
Right.
Rigs and gear.
Okay.
Like, and water.
Yeah. Candy.
Candy in the summer.
Candy's
like,
always
water
important.
Was important, right?
Yes, in the heat wave, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the heat wave, the water was really good.
How do they help out in the winter and the rain stuff?
They handle gloves and toques.
Socks.
Socks are very important. Toques.
Yeah. Nothing like a dry pair of socks when you got
wet feet.
Yeah. Street feet are the worst. It's trench foot, right? There's no other way to call it. It's bloody awful.
How would things be different out here without these guys coming out here, especially at night?
Oh, a lot more angry people. Yeah, because your feet are hurt, right? You can't walk, and wet and cold.
There is a feeling of safety when they come around.
Yeah, there is, definitely.
You know, like just some normality.
Yeah.
Grounds things a little bit.
Yeah. Without the feeling like the oppressive feeling of police.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like.
Yeah. What's the difference between guys like this and the police then?
Police aren't so friendly.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of beyond the call.
Yeah.
Right.
BPD can be pretty harsh.
Yeah. These guys are coming with a bit more of a gentler approach, and they're not cops for one. They're not here to do policing.
That's right.
Yeah.
But if you need a police work, they will get it for you, right? Like if you need a police, they will help you get them, right?
Yeah.
But it's good to have them for that, right? Like if someone needs the police, they're good to have around to use their phone or whatever, right?
Right.
Better them than us.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, thanks, guys. Appreciate you chatting with me today.
Yeah. Okay. No problem.
Thank you.
So let me just ask you, like, one thing that we do is we sort of use, like, position of intent, which is, like, you know, like, things that, you know, sort of signs of, like, an OD and sort of assessing somebody is going to be, obviously, like, the level of consciousness, the breathing, but you have to sometimes get pretty close to be able to assess that effectively. But in terms of position of intent, what that basically is it's asking yourself, okay, did that person choose to put themselves in the posture that they're in? And so when you see somebody who's, like, kind of curled up, you know, on top of, like, you know, like a blanket or, like, some cardboard or some affects, and they're kind of, like, in a sleeping kind of, like, curled up position, well, you know, they could still be overdosing. So, like, if you have other cause for concern, then by all means, check up on them, but probably not. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's sort of, like, use that to kind of inform your calculus. Whereas if you see somebody who's, like, passed out, sort of starfished, half on the street, half on the sidewalk, like that, you know, that immediately kind of looks much more out of place.
Right.
Yeah.
Do people generally react well when they see you and they're kind of woken up by you, I guess?
Yeah, occasionally. I mean, if you do, right? If you do in a way that's approachable, you're not kind of like, you know, you're not coppish, for lack of a better word. You know, it's not like, hey, you okay there? What substances have you done tonight? If it's not like that. If it's like, you know, hey, buddy, you all right? Like, just checking up on you, you know, and maybe if you kind of disturb the slumber, it's like, oh, do you want a sandwich or, you know, juice, like some candy? So, you know, there's some kind of like, you know, like you're also providing some service, and usually the vast majority of people totally appreciate that we're out here and like recognize that we're just looking out for them. Occasionally you might see somebody who's a little bit grumpy, but beyond a groan or something like that, or, you know.
It's welcomed.
Yeah, totally. Something else, we're going to go up in him.
Thank you so much. Lovely. Thanks, guys. Do we have a good night.
Hello?
Once again, that was Bobby Nika and Megan Fox from Street Saviors Outreach Society. To learn more about Street Saviors, visit the links in this episode's description. I want to thank the team at Street Saviors for having me out and for allowing me to join them and be a part of their squad. I'm absolutely humbled by the collective generosity these volunteers provide the community and for doing their part to support our city's most vulnerable. I'm John Z, and you've been listening to The Pulse on CFRO Co-op Radio 100.5 FM, Vancouver.
Those were Megan Fox and Bobby Nika from Street Saviors Outreach Society. You can find Street Saviors Outreach Society on Facebook at Vancouver Street Saviors. CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.